Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. And we head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. Gentry, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. A little sore from the bowling last night.
I was going to ask you.
Not as bad as I thought it'd be.
Did you ice down? Did you stretch? How are we doing this morning?
Just feeling nice and old, you know, nothing like a little exercise to show you how old you are.
High-level athleticism on display last night.
That's what happened.
Let me tell you.
That's what happened. So, Gentry, the college football playoff rankings out tonight, and I think we're going to find out pretty much everything we need to know about the kind of chance Vanderbilt's got to make this thing. Obviously, an incredibly impressive win against Tennessee, particularly how dominant they were in the second half. How do you think things are going to shake out on the Vanderbilt front? What's your chances that Vanderbilt could get some good news tonight on the college football playoff ranking front?
Well, I just looked at the ESPN playoff predictor for joining you guys, and I think they have Vandy at 6%. So that's probably a good number. I mean, I hate it for Vanderbilt. I do. I mean, it's a shame to think that team, with the season they had and the way they're playing right now, is not going to get a chance in a playoff. But I do think that's how this is going to go. And I've kind of thought for a few weeks now that this is how it was going to go. Credit Vanderbilt for making this difficult, for playing probably their best football here the last couple of weeks. And I think, you know, with how they played it in Knoxville, I think that should give the committee something to think about. And it will be interesting tonight to see if that moved the needle or how much it did. But what got Vanderbilt here was Oklahoma. Oklahoma winning games in Knoxville and Tuscaloosa, the one in Tuscaloosa in particular. And it's just set up to where every argument you could make for Vanderbilt versus any SEC team, there's a pretty strong argument back the other direction just because of the results. Oklahoma winning in Tuscaloosa, Vanderbilt not doing it. And you know, this is a flawed system. These guys this committee is going to try – they're going to have to make logical decisions based off illogical information, things that aren't fair. And that's just what we have right now. And certain teams each year are going to have this happen to them. And unfortunately, I think it's going to be Vanderbilt this year.
When you look at the situation, and I agree with everything you said, I think, you know, again, like Oklahoma, watch them. Then after they did what they did what you just said, they come home and just win these games against Missouri and LSU that are just like complete, like just assault on the eyes, just awful to watch. But they won them. They found a way to win them. So I think you're right. I mean, the resume is better in terms of their wins, obviously. But do you think that any of this is related to, because this is what I hear from Vanderbilt fans. One, you know, the helmet scouting, it's Vanderbilt, the natural bias against just the idea that Vanderbilt would be good. And two, the fact that they started the season sort of unranked and out of mind.
I do think there's something to that, especially when you talk about a Notre Dame or a big brand like that, or Oklahoma too. But I think the bias here is against the SEC from the standpoint of they don't want to give half the field to the SEC. And I understand that. I do understand from a national perspective that there's just going to be resistance in general, no matter what it looks like, to having six SEC teams in this tournament. And that was kind of what you look at it all along and say, Vanderbilt's issue is not going to be getting in the top 12. It's going to be getting in the top five of the SEC. And whether or not that's fair, whether or not you're really choosing the best 12 teams when you do that, I mean, there's a lot of arguments to be made there. You know, back before the season, we all hated the idea of automatic bids for the conferences. You know, the Big Ten wanted to do that. We didn't like that. No one liked that. But what I do think is, you know, something like this could make people start coming around on that kind of thing, only because look at this weekend. You have an SEC championship game that both teams really don't even want to play in it. That game has lost all meaning. And the one thing that came out of those discussions or those ideas before the season was the idea of some kind of play-in this weekend instead of an SEC championship game. And if you're what's happening with Vanderbilt right now, I think that's a good argument to have that kind of play-in, because I honestly believe nobody in this mix right now would want to play Vanderbilt.
I think that's fair. I will also say, though, on that point, that means that we'd have to have a fourth Big Ten team right now, and I sure as hell don't want any other teams out of that league. So, you know, I'd get rid of all of it and start the playoff earlier over this play-in idea. But I will tell you, I'd rather see Vanderbilt in the play-in than watch these championship games that have no stakes. So it's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, right now Georgia would rather not play in this.
For sure.
and you know, why can't in the future, why can't you have those two teams that qualify for the SEC championship game? They're through. Their reward is to not have to play that game and go ahead and advance. And then play, let's say, two play-in games, 3 versus 6, 4 versus 5 on this weekend. And, you know, it would be interesting to see how that goes.
So on the Tennessee front, Gentry, obviously, I mean, you get thumped by your in-state rival to end the year. You're 8-4. When you look through their schedule, I mean, they really don't have a good win this year. The good teams that they played, they lost to, 3 of which were at home. So how do you put into scope what Tennessee did this season, and where do you think Heupel and company go from here?
Yeah, I mean, I think you feel okay about this season up until this last game. Up until the second half of this last game. Second half of this last game is the worst Tennessee played maybe all season, especially defensively. I think giving up 45 points to Vanderbilt and watching Pavi and company do what they did in Neyland Stadium, that is a memory that is going to stick with this program all offseason. And I think it's going to affect a lot of what they do, you know, staff-wise, personnel-wise. I think they're going to have to make some changes, especially on the defensive side of the ball. It was disappointing. I think this year was a missed opportunity for Tennessee just because I think the offense, with Joey Aguilar being a lot better than I think anybody would have expected given that situation, the offense was good enough to do better than 8-4. This was an offense this was a playoff offense. It just definitely wasn't a playoff defense. And, you know, I think under Heupel's tenure in Knoxville, that has happened more than it hasn't. And the 1 year that they had a good defense and a good running game, that is when they made the playoffs. So I think when you're Tennessee, they're going to have to get the defensive part of this figured out. And I know everyone's tired of hearing, gosh, when you play this kind of hurry-up offense and the time of possession, and it does put the defense at a disadvantage. It just does. And they're going to have to figure that out.
If you're Josh Heupel right now, are you looking at next year, a critical year? I think we'd all agree, and saying, okay, George McIntyre, Faison Brandon, battle it out. One of them's, they're both really good talents. It's going to be a great competition, and we'll end up with a good quarterback. Or are you saying, man, I cannot mess around. I need to go out and, you know, we need to spend $2 million on a veteran quarterback?
That's a great question. It's a great question. I think, you know, with McIntyre, you bring him in thinking he's going to be ready to be the guy probably by this point. But you also sign a guy as good as the one they're bringing in thinking he's probably good enough to play right away. So it'd be hard for me to think one of those two wouldn't be ready. But I don't know. I mean, with McIntyre, I mean, you're told he's put on weight, you know, this first season. I'm sure that's true. Gosh, he still looks like he needs to put on some more weight to play in the SEC. I think there's a lot of potential there with him, though, and, you know, obviously a big-time recruit coming in. So I think Tennessee's going to have something to work with there. But we'll find out soon enough on that and to, you know, that what their true belief on whether McIntyre is ready or not, I think, will be reflected by what they do in the portal. Yeah.
Last thing for you, Gentry. Do you have a favorite horror movie? And if not, was Myles Garrett against the Titans qualify for that coming up on Sunday?
Boy, the guys on the beat were looking at the weather in Cleveland for what the travel is going to be like to this game, and it's like frigid and snowy and just. Oh man, there's such a reward that you get to watch that game. I don't know if either of y'all were at Nissan on Sunday, but it was, I don't want to say low point because we keep saying low point with this team, yeah, and they keep going, it keeps getting worse. So I'm not going to sit here and say it can't get worse because it can. But man, that was just bad, even for them. That was just everything about that game was just the most depressing, awful experience. And it's, you know, you just sit there and you look around and there's all these empty seats, and the Tennessee fans that are there, they're booing. You know, the other people, everybody in the seats, they're either booing or chanting Duval. And it's just, you know, teams playing the way they are. Their only field goal, the only points of the game were a field goal. Everybody booed when they kicked it because they didn't go for fourth down, including, you know, even including the quarterback was upset about that. This is embarrassing. This has gotten embarrassing. And it has been for a while, I guess, but how does this team, you know, the NFL is built to not have a team be this bad.
Yep.
And certainly not for the second year in a row. And I understand coming in, everybody, I didn't think they were going to be any good. Nobody thought they would be very good. But it really has gotten embarrassing the Titans have let it go this far. This is a special case in the league to have a team this bad still.
Yeah, there is no doubt about
they
it.
They are special.
They are.
That's they the word. Are.
Gentry, appreciate your time as always, my friend. Enjoy the college football playoff rankings tonight. We'll have a lot to talk about tomorrow, and appreciate you taking time to be with us.
You bet. Take care, guys.
Gentry Estes from the Tennessean does an outstanding job covering all things Nashville sports. Really, all things Tennessee sports. Taking your thoughts on what Gentry had to say, we'll get into Mark Stoops being shown the door by Kentucky. Plus, what more could we see in the coaching carousel around college football? All that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Appreciate Gentry Estes for being with us in the last segment. Joe, we had a lot to get into yesterday. I mean, the Lane Kiffin drama, Tennessee Vanderbilt, the Titans doing whatever they did on Sunday. A lot of stuff to talk about yesterday. We did not get to Mark Stoops being fired by Kentucky. I know that we have a lot of Kentucky fans that listen to the show, and Mark Stoops has been there since 2013. So you're talking about a long run as head coach at Kentucky. He finishes after 13 years, 162 games, a record of 82-80, and now he is gone. It did not end well. He got blown out by Vanderbilt and smoked by Louisville to end the year, and that is all she wrote for Mark Stoops at Kentucky. And I was talking about this with some friends the other day. I think they owe him like a little bit over $37 million in the next 60 days, which is just sweet. I mean, there's got to be no better job in sports than the fired college football coach. So he's going to be fine. But what do you make of Kentucky moving on from Mark Stoops, hiring Will Stein to be the next head coach?
Well, first of all, he has agreed to – he negotiated that to be extended. So as I saw someone tweeted a picture of Bobby Bonilla. So he's not going to get all that money instantly now.
Forget that. I'd go 60 days. I'm not negotiating nothing.
I mean, I think it's like, okay, I'm going to get all of it. Yeah, that's fine. You know, yeah, that's fine. Give me $100 a day for the rest of my life.
You'd have to peel me off the golf course.
Yeah.
We can't find Robbie. He's on hole 8.
It is great work to be paid to not coach. Also, I mean, I got Mark Stoops on the phone a couple weeks ago after he's this tremendous run to get them back to relevance, and I wrote this column about like how he's unappreciated and like look at again they have this solid foundation and they're tough and the. Like, you got to appreciate what he's done, and they get outscored 86-17 in the next two games.
Kiss of death.
Great job! But I think it was coming. And look, he was leaving for Texas A&M. And then something happened there with the trustees, and that was actually a little bit of a mini Schiano thing that happened down there. And then that's when Elko got the job. So he's been looking to get out. Obviously, Kentucky. The swiftness of this hire tells me that Kentucky has been kind of preparing for this, right? I mean, I don't think they
– Yeah.
Oh, well, we should have a search. Let's call this guy. You know, it's amazing how many things are done, you know, back – like Michigan State hired Pat Fitzgerald. That guy's, like, not working, so they were able to just meet him secretly and do all this stuff. But, like, meanwhile, you have all these guys doing their job, and they hire like that, and it's like, wow, how'd that happen? I don't know. I mean, Will Stein is a really good OC. I love what Oregon does offensively. He's very creative. He's obviously a smart guy. Is that he also has been at Oregon where, like, they have tremendous players, and they most weeks are going to overwhelm people with talent along with really creative offense. I mean, I don't know. Is he going to be a good head coach in Kentucky? I'm not sure. Are Kentucky fans excited about that? You know, I'd like to know that. I would hope Kentucky fans can tip their cap to Mark Stoops. I mean, the winningest coach in program history, and he got them to a level of consistency that I would not have expected. And I would also take this another step, Robbie. And this is kind of what I wrote in the column too, but you know, Vanderbilt fans, this is something to look at, you know, because Mark Stoops had a couple of those teams that won 10 games, and they had the team that played Georgia, I think it was an 18, like, you know, basically to win the East, you know, and they lost. But he set the bar at a certain place, right, with especially, you know, that first 10-win season. And, you know, then you settled into you're probably like a seven, eight win type of program. You know, that's for Kentucky. That's tremendous based on the history. And based on, I mean, people care so much more about their basketball team. Yep. You know, that's the only SEC team you could say that about. It's something to remember for Vanderbilt because, I mean, I don't think it's realistic to think that Clark Lea is going to be ripping off 10 win seasons over and over again. Like, you know, can he get is the floor raised at Vanderbilt to where you can count on most years getting to a bowl game, and then you hope that you can rally up for some years where you really have a special team? That's probably the reality. Vanderbilt fans, I think, need to embrace that, and I'm sure some will be like, yeah, no duh, dude. Like, we're not stupid. We're not expecting 10 wins. But I'm just saying, I think at Kentucky, it did get a little bit like, okay, well, what's next? Why can't you do better than this?
Right. I mean, it ended – poorly, right? I mean, 4-8 last year.
Yes.
5-7 this year, and you got smoked the last two games. But, I mean, he went through, I mean, what was it, 8 straight years with a bowl game? A couple 10-win seasons thrown in there. You know, 8-5, 7-6, 7-6. I mean, he had the 1 year in 2020 where he was 5-6, but he still got to a bowl game that year. So, like, it was a pretty good model of consistency for that program. And then it almost felt like at the end of it, he was a victim of his own success. Maybe not even this year, because this year, I think, like, it was pretty clear it was pretty toxic. And like you said, he was trying to get out at some point. But I think even towards the end of 2023, like, they finished 7-6 that year. And I remember Kentucky fans being like, this guy sucks. We're never going to be better than what we are right now with Mark Stoops. And it's like, well, that may be true.
Can be worse.
You can be a whole lot worse.
Yeah. And also, to be fair, and look, they are what they are these last years. And so that's what happened. I mean, you know, it went down, and so, you know, it probably makes sense for everybody to do something new. But they had no NIL money. Like, they had nothing. And I don't know. I'm sure there's other programs that can say the same thing. But in those early days, I mean, he basically publicly, and he was in a big thing with Cal.
Oh, yeah.
And then with the AD, and he basically was like I have no chance to compete. And that's still even with recruiting high school players at that point, it does show up a little bit in the next couple of years too, right? Like, your roster isn't as good. So not giving him a total pass on that, but it took Kentucky time to realize, oh, yeah, I guess we have to put a couple bucks in football, huh?
Yeah. Penn State's still open.
Yeah.
You know.
I thought they were going to get the JMU guy.
I thought they were
going to UCLA.
He's going to UCLA. There's all this speculation around BYU's coach now, and if he could end up at Penn State. Josh Heupel shot that down yesterday with Chris Lowe, saying, I ain't going to Penn State. He's hanging around in Tennessee. So I guess you can forget the Heupel to Penn State stuff. We're in the world.
But to be fair, we don't know that Penn State had any interest.
Yeah, I have no clue.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was just some betting market said it was out there.
So. Yeah, yeah.
But he told Chris Lowe that that's not happening. So I'm very interested to see what happens to Penn State. I mean, you've had all these jobs that have been open after Penn State fired James Franklin that have now found coaches, and Penn State, for whatever reason, has not found theirs yet.
It's really weird. I mean, obviously, like, the Cignetti stuff, I think, was real for sure. And then, you know, it was immediately Indiana said, nope, step off. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I'd love to know, like, are there some other people working at other places right now that that they wanted. And look, I really thought there were some people in college football media who really thought that Penn State was going to be interested in Clark Lea. But I have not seen anything in terms of that being, you know, a situation. So it's weird. And what if they do get Satake this week? I mean, BYU is another team that could be in the playoff. Well, what happens there? We have another lane situation?
It's a great question.
honestly, BYU to me, I guess you can take this to Vanderbilt. BYU to me, like Vanderbilt should be ahead of BYU.
I agree.
And I'm not saying that BYU should be penalized for losing to Texas Tech if they lose this weekend. Obviously, if they win, they're in. But if they get smoked by Texas Tech like they did the first time, I mean, it is a data point.
Yeah.
It is a data point, and I mean, it's just like their best win is against a Utah team that also is not good and also should absolutely be behind Vanderbilt.
Yeah. No, I totally agree.
And then if you take their coach out?
Exactly.
No, they're not in.
615-737-1025, our phone number. I've got a hypothetical that I want to throw out there for Tennessee fans coming up next that the answer on the surface may appear obvious, but I think it's a little bit more complicated. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. We'll have the Rob Rant coming up here in just a few minutes.
Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Joe, I've got a hypothetical I want to play out with you that I don't know how likely it is, but I guess until there's a ruling on it, we have to at least entertain the possibility, right? We know that Joey Aguilar joined Diego Pavia's lawsuit a couple of weeks ago, essentially trying to fight for another year of eligibility in college football and going back to the junior college stuff, saying that that should not count towards the eligibility window. So we'll see. I have no idea what's going to come of that. I don't know if he will be granted another year of eligibility, if they're going to say, hey, that's not happening this time around, and he's going to go try his luck at the NFL. We'll see what happens on that front. My question is, if he is granted another year of eligibility, should Tennessee want him back as their starting quarterback? Now, I think on the surface, Joe, you hear that, and the answer is obvious, right? It's like, well, yeah, of course they would. I mean, he just threw for 3,400 yards and 24 touchdowns, and quarterback was much better this year for Tennessee than it was last year when they made the playoff with Nico Iamaliava. So I hear that. I also look at the stats and I look at the numbers, and they're great for Joey Aguilar. 24 touchdowns, 10 picks, 3,500 yards. I look at the games. He had two, what ended up being pretty big interceptions in the Georgia game where they lost. We know about Alabama, right? Like, I don't know if they win against Alabama, even if he doesn't throw the pick six. But the pick six right before half is a huge play in that game. I think we all understand that. I mean, that's a massive swing in that game. The Oklahoma game, I mean, he threw for a ton of yards in that game. I think he threw for 393. But if you remember the game, he wasn't very good against Oklahoma. Just a couple of brutal interceptions that he threw in that game. And then there's the second half in Vanderbilt. And I don't put that, you know, a lot on Aguilar, but they just didn't get anything done in the offensively in the second half there. So in, you know, the big moments that they had this year against the good teams that they played, there were some flaws at the quarterback position. I also look at it this way. One thing, and this is kind of a different way that I'm looking at it. We all know how important next year is for Tennessee. And you just asked Gentry a few minutes ago about, you know, two very talented freshmen that they're going to have. And I think that's got to factor into your plan to some degree. Like, you know that those two guys are going to be in the mix for starting quarterback next year. Do you look at your situation if you're Heupel, recognizing how big next year is for you, and feel like you have to go get a guy who's proven, who has been a starter, who's played a lot of football? Because I will say, the two guys that he's brought in that have played pretty good amount of football, and one of them he didn't even bring in, Pruitt did. Hooker looked pretty darn good under Josh Heupel. Aguilar looked pretty darn good under Josh Heupel. And Milton had played some football, but not as much as those two guys had played. And the thing that kind of strikes me about that is, you know, we went through a period of time, Joe, where it was like, man, Hendon Hooker, like, did Hendon Hooker make Josh Heupel at Tennessee? Well, when Nico was struggling and Milton struggled, it was like, did Hendon Hooker make him? And it's like, well, if you look at what Hendon Hooker was before, and frankly, what Hendon Hooker has been after, maybe Josh Heupel deserves a little bit more credit in the Hendon Hooker discussion than we've given him at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Joey Aguilar. Joey Aguilar's always put up good numbers, right, at lower levels. Turned the ball over a lot. We knew the flaws coming into it. Nobody expected him to be as good as he was this year.
So neither one of those guys, Hooker or Aguilar, are overly, like from a pure talent standpoint. Forget the production. Purely talent. Not highly recruited. Wasn't like you're dealing with five-star guys out there. But they were very productive in this offense. So I wonder what could happen, and I don't know who this would be, what could happen if Josh Heupel went out and targeted a quarterback that has played a lot of football, that is a very talented player out there. Could, clearly, bringing those type of guys into this offense has worked for him. So where do you stand on the Aguilar front? Let's say he is granted another year of eligibility. Is it as simple as, well, he's the starting quarterback and the other two young guys are just sitting behind him next year?
No, I definitely don't think it's that simple. You know, another thing to always put into these discussions is, okay, how many guys are you paying? Because, you know, teams don't really pay three quarterbacks, right?
Right.
I mean, you have other things you have to do, and, like, you have to, like, whatever, you know, you have to make choices. Everybody does. So, if he got it, I would definitely want him back. I would also, and that would be my veteran that I'm going out to get. I'm like, okay, Joey's back, and if Joey's the best, then and he gets better even, and we can clean up a few things, then that's probably your best option. But this is a competition, and these guys are competing. I mean, if these guys aren't, you know, like if these guys aren't in a real competition, like you're gonna. You risk losing both of them. You risk losing both of them if you go out and get somebody, too. I mean, Brandon on the YouTube chat's like, go get a QB in the portal, whether he comes back or not. So you're talking about four guys. You're going to pay someone in the portal. I mean, Aguilar played well enough at Tennessee this year that if he gets that year, he can go somewhere else.
Sure.
Yeah. Someone else will take him, too. I mean, he's not going to – and I don't know what they're paying, you know, Brandon or McIntyre, but pretty significant recruits, you know. I mean, some programs are trying to do a little bit more of like kind of like incentive-based ideas where it's like, you know, you there's a baseline, but then once you become a starter or whatever, you do this or that, then you get – I mean, Pavia came in here like making nothing basically, but before that last season was out, he was not making nothing. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, that's kind of how it goes. But I like four guys – you can't pay four guys. So,
no, I agree with
but
that.
But this is always the hypothetical that I'm assuming isn't going to happen, that Aguilar is going to get that year. But yeah, it is interesting. I would definitely want him back if he does. I would also be like, hey, let's see one of the young guys beat him out. Why would, you know?
Well,
he sets the standard in the room, but go ahead and we're going to give you a real opportunity to get enough reps to beat him out.
Well,
probably McIntyre in particular,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like I don't think I could be wrong, but I guess I would be – maybe I shouldn't be, but I would be surprised if Faison Brandon is the starting quarterback.
True freshman, yes, in this offense. In some ways, I think it's easier for quarterbacks, but also I think it's tough for a true freshman.
It's true freshman, and look, I understand he's incredibly talented, obviously. But, I mean, Nico was incredibly talented, and he didn't start his first year either.
Right.
So, and I know it's a different situation. They had Joe Milton kind of waiting in the wings, so we'll see. Maybe Brandon is the starting quarterback. I do think this requires Josh Heupel to be really honest with himself right now. Like, how good does he think George McIntyre is? Does he think George McIntyre is ready to be the starting quarterback next year? And that's something I have no way to be able to answer, right? Like, we saw him – McIntyre basically got in garbage time throughout the year and, you know, did the majority of his work against, like, ETSU. So it's like, okay, how good is he really? I have no idea. But that Josh Heupel would have a better idea of that. So – I understand that there's a spring coming up. There's an entire offseason where McIntyre and all these guys can get better and improve. But I think you got to be like really honest with yourself right now if you're Heupel, as you're preparing for the portal. Do you feel that confident where you're going to basically potentially tie your future at Tennessee to George McIntyre, who hasn't played yet, being your starting quarterback next year?
Right. Because he got grace. He was going to – I mean, he got grace. As we talked about when Nico left, you know, there's going to be a limitation. Are people still going to be – you know, and people are mad at him right now, which is – again, I'm not saying Tennessee fans are wrong for that, but I think I'm just saying, like, the grace probably runs out a little bit, even if he says – because some fans might say, well, okay, so this is the year you're going with a young guy and you got to expect some bumps, but it's like – yeah.
I don't think it's going to go over 12-team
well. Playoff, man. Yeah. Like, you know, so I think it's a really interesting question. They have seen McIntyre all year in the building. They've seen him on the practice field. Gentry talking about him gaining weight. They have to have some kind of a sense. I mean, I think a redshirt freshman with all the right ingredients could come in and do well. So they got to have a pretty good idea on him. It's probably harder with Brandon. But again, yep. Like you said, I mean, if you're Brandon and you think that you're coming in and starting as a true freshman, well, first of all, that's a bad job, I think, of communicating by Apple and the staff. You got to be real with these kids, right? Like, that's not going to be easy to do. Nico sat the year and was pretty good last year. I know some people don't want to remember it that way. A-Dub Wright says, Heupel needs a top QB. He keeps turning trash into polished turds for the NFL. I mean, Nico was a five-star. Everybody in the world wanted Nico. So, I mean, he's brought in. And Brandon, everybody in the world wanted Brandon, right?
But I guess the point on that is, and what I think has got to be a part of his decision-making too, is are there quarterbacks that are going to hit the portal that are more talented than Joey Aguilar is?
Yeah.
That you target if you're Heupel. And yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't know if this guy fits the bill or not. I mean, heading into the year, he certainly would have. It looks like Sam Levitt going to be in the portal. Do you go try for that if you're Heupel? And that's just a random name I'm throwing out there. Again, I don't know the specifics of who's going to be jumping in the transfer portal and who's not. But that type of guy is what I'm talking about.
He'll be coveted. Also, that guy, you would have quarterback run game, I would think, like, better than anybody that they've had, including Nico.
Yeah.
You know, if you had him, do you value that? He's going to command a number. Yeah. Sam Levitt is going to command a number.
But that's what I'm talking about. Like, I think that's the decision that you're faced with now if you're Heupel. Like, and again, I think I have no idea what's going to happen with Aguilar. I'm operating under the assumption that he's probably not going to win this lawsuit and he's going to be gone. So if that's the case, you're either going with really young players at quarterback, or do you take a big swing portal-wise at quarterback if you're Heupel? I think it's a really fascinating question with where they're at.
Yeah. No, it is. It's a huge deal. And like Jenner said, like, we're gonna it won't be long before we have an idea here, like, what they really think.
No doubt.
And I think it probably maybe a little bit of a comment on what Heupel thinks about his standing.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll have the Rob rant coming up here in just a few minutes. We'll get back into the Titans at 8 o'clock. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
No!
Now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Hey, Coach, I weaved around the security guard over there. Can you give me 5 minutes to talk, please?
Actually, we're going by Tiger Stadium. I call one person. I called Ed Ogeron.
I told you I would do hot yoga with you anytime you wanted.
Back then, you could just, like, go bowl and, like, smoke cigarettes and stuff.
Smokey, this is not Nam. This is bowling. There are rules.
Hey.
I saw Pete Weber last night. It was not the professional bowler. It's an absolute psychopath out there.
That's right. Who do you think you are? I am.
Why does LSU make the most sense for you right now, Coach?
Hey, man, all I can do is, man, this place just makes me want to talk like you right now.
We started off Monday knowing we're going to win this game.
What are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. I'm like channeling Ed right now. I was like, I'm feeling him.
Go Tigers.
I don't know what's going on, man, but I'm feeling you right now.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
I've got other words I can say, but I'm going to hold those off. It is time for the Rob Rant, brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Rise up to better health. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net.
Lebowski, baby.
That was good stuff.
I see what you're doing over there.
That was good stuff. Man, the more I hear our Marty Smith impersonations, the more I love them.
We're both pretty good at Marty Smith. We can have a Marty Smith conversation.
Oh, boy. Your Harbaugh Marty Smith is the best one.
Coach Harbaugh, can you spare a square?
Oh, God. All right. I want to address some things that I've seen on social media in the aftermath of the Titans game on Sunday. As you know, if you were either there in the building or if you're watching the game on TV, not a whole lot of people at Nissan Stadium on Sunday for Titans and Jags. I mean, you looked up, and look, I have no idea how many people were actually there. I can just tell you from some of the pictures I saw that Kuharsky and others tweeted out, and from the television broadcast itself, who did their, you know, their wide shots, and you look up, and it's like, wow, like the entire upper deck's empty. It's crazy out there. It looked legitimately like the stadium was half empty. It's just what it looked like. I have no idea how many people were there. And I saw not really Titans fans, but I saw some people around NFL circles like take notice of it. And we're like, wow, like Nashville, pretty good sports town. Like, is it that bad with the Titans? And I was like, yes, it is. One thing we should not be doing is getting on Titans fans for not showing up to the game on Sunday to watch this team. And that's before they played the way they played on Sunday, by the way, which was, as Gentry pointed out earlier, maybe the worst it's been. And there are some doozies that they played. It was up there on Sunday with how bad it was. I do not blame Titans fans for one second. And I'm just going to be honest with you. I was offered tickets from multiple people to go to this game on Sunday.
And you're like, pay me.
There is nothing else. Like, I would do anything else than show up and watch the Titans and the Jags on Sunday. And look, there are some people that I know. There are some people that I love that show up every week. And they're there all the time. And they were there Sunday. And good for them. And
they're the best.
And they're the best.
Best fans.
And I hope when the day comes that the Titans are good again, and I don't know when it's going to be, but it'll happen at some point. And hopefully when they win a Super Bowl, again, I don't know when that'll be, but hopefully it happens at some point. I hope that those people more than anybody else enjoy it because they earned it, and they are true Titans fans.
No doubt.
But I, for one second, am not about to sit here and get on the city of Nashville for not showing up to watch that team. Like, there reaches a point where enough's enough, and you got enough of these people anyway that have already invested in the new stadium that they're buying tickets for and they're preparing for that. You are not going to find me with how bad they've been getting on Titans fans for that stadium being half empty on Sunday. I'm sorry. You're just not.
No, I mean, we're to the point where you're extraordinary. You're an extraordinary outlier if you're sitting through this stuff. Good for you. You are the best fan. You're the best fans. I mean, you're amazing. But nobody, people who don't show up, sell out there. That's the problem. See, the thing about this last game is, apparently Duval isn't excited to travel for their, you know, their playoff contending team. They don't. We don't get a bunch of Jags fans, you know, in here. We get Bills and Steelers and Patriots or whatever fans. We don't get any Jags fans, so it looks worse. I mean, some of the crowds this year, obviously, have been inflated by the visiting team, right?
Yes.
No, you're 100% right. So you're saying that these are some, even like some around the league.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. Wow, the crowd's really light in Nashville. And it's like, yeah, it is, man. I don't know if you noticed this. They are awful and have been so for a long time.
Yeah, wow. How about a little context of like how bad it's been for these fans? Because, again, we're talking four straight seasons with double-digit losses. Someone do the research. I don't have time right now. Like, you're not going to find that a ton. You're not going to find that. In fact, I'm gonna look at the Lions' history. The crappy Lions who ruined my childhood. I bet you they haven't had too many four-year stretches of double-digit losses. It's hard to do in the NFL. Very hard.
And this one's going to be well into the double digits. I mean, it's going to be significantly into the double digits.
Yeah. This is all – I mean, if they had 20 games, this team would have had a shot to, like, get double-double digits.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's bad. And, look, I understand – you know, this is not – Sunday's game was the extreme of it. That was as light as I think I've ever seen it in there, you know, outside of like a preseason game, okay? So I get that. But I think even going back to game one, and we talked about it, I think it kind of shows you where this fan base is right now. Number one, with all the construction going on downtown, it's an absolute pain in the butt to get down there. It costs you an arm or leg to park. You got to do all these things. I mean, this is not just a Titans thing. This is a general NFL thing, right? Like, it's – the NFL is a tailor-made product to watch on TV. It's a really easy thing to do, to watch on TV. So going back to game one that they played at home this year, I mean, it was Cam Ward's debut at home, number one overall pick, and the crowd wasn't full. Like, there were still some empty seats in the stadium. So that right there kind of showed me, it's like, well, that's where Titans fans kind of are right now. They are down and out, and the Titans are going to have to do some work. Yes, on the field, they're going to have to win, and if they do that, it'll take care of itself for the most part. But I do think the Titans, over the years, have not been as good as they could have been and should have been of really connecting with their fan base.
I know that this is, you know, I'm sure the Titans organization already is, you know, sick of hearing a lot of things, but a couple blocks away, they've had a model to me for enhancing whatever the game experience is, whatever the team is doing. I know the Preds have, like, they've been obviously, like, pretty good for most of their history, but, like, that's kind of, and I understand it's different too when you're talking about an arena that size and yep. and a, but yeah, I agree. That's something that they have not done well enough, and you hope that they at least are trying to take some new things. They're going to have this awesome new stadium. There's some things that they really need to work on.
Lenny says,
beyond winning.
I'm an independent contractor. I've got season tickets. I chose to work on Sunday and not go to the game. I would rather make money than go watch that crap. One texter says, I've had tickets since 08. It's the earliest I've ever left a game. So I heard a lot of that at the bowling alley last night, too, of people that have been there for a long time. They were like, either I just didn't go or I left at like halftime. That's how bad it was.
Yeah. And I know it's crazy to think that we'd be disappointed by anything the Titans do, but that's the thing. It's like after the previous week and what they did against Seattle, it's okay, maybe there's something to watch here. Maybe there is a little bit something here, and then you're like,
complete dud.
Oh, thanks. Another Lucy, put that ball down for a minute.
Just and rip it away.
The kicker will coo. Will
what a
whiff.
That was hilarious.
What an attempt by Young Wei Koo last night. Good stuff.
I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like that before.
I mean, I've seen people do that on a golf course. I don't know if I've ever seen an NFL kicker
like
get
a Charles
his foot
Barkley
stuck
golf
in the ground.
Swing.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Coming up next, I'm going to throw this out there. If we would have told Mike Borgonzi before the season that the Titans would be this bad and that Cam Ward's numbers would be what they are to this point, what would he have said? We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.